Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Soul Seekers podcast, where we believe that hunting has the power to transform lives through primal adventure as we share our mission of mentorship is conservation. To learn more about everything we do, check out our show on Carbon TV or go to soulseekersnation.com. Freedom on, everybody, and stay soulful. If you want to take your shooting experience to the next level, then check out Coltac gear for 100% made in America products. Coltac manufactures specialty gear designed for long-range shooting, hunting, and other tactical applications. From their support bags, suppressor covers, shooting mats, and a whole lot more, Coltac is creating tough, durable, and innovative gear for both civilian and professional markets. Go to Coltac.com to see all that they have to offer. That's Coltac.com. If you are looking to get a new rifle or build your own, look no further than Kelbley's. Kelbley's actions and rifles have a higher level of accuracy and hold 92 world records set on either one of their rifles or rifle actions. Whether you're looking for an ultralight mountain rifle or wanting to compete in precision rifle shooting, Kelbley's has you covered. Go to Kelbley.com to find out more or give them a call as their customer service is the best. That's Kelbley.com. Kelbley's. If you're looking to take your hunting to another level, there's no better way to do it than by subscribing to Onyx Hunt. If you want to get better at hunting and go deeper into your scouting, Onyx is the number one GPS app for that. Join the millions of hunters who trust Onyx Hunt to find more game, discover new access, and hunt smarter. If you want to know more about Onyx, go to onyxmaps.com/hunt or download their app today for a free trial. If you are wanting to become more accurate and deadly with your shooting, one of the best things you can do is upgrade your trigger with a Timney. Timney triggers are 100% made in America and have been since their founding, providing a crisp, reliable, and repeatable trigger break every time. I'll be shooting Timney triggers in my guns this year, and I hope you'll join me in shooting the world's finest trigger. Go to TimneyTriggers.com to get yours today. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of the Soul Seekers podcast. I'm your host, Johnny Mack. Today's episode is one that I've been looking forward to bringing to you for a little bit now. We had to reschedule this podcast, but it's one that is going to be very important because the guest for today's show, understands the transformative power of hunting. She understands how much the outdoors impact the soul, and in her bio from her website, Her Outdoor Journey, she is a mother, and beyond her work with Her Outdoor Journey, Courtney deeply rooted in health and wellness, bringing over 20 years of experience in fitness world to her work, she has empowered countless individuals, uncover the confidence, overcome personal challenges, and repair souls after walking through life's trials. She believes in inspiring other people, and we know here at the podcast that inspired people inspire others. So without further ado, our guest of the hour, Miss Courtney Preedy of Her Outdoor Journey. Thank you so much for coming on the show. Really appreciate it.
Man, thanks for having me. What an intro. Thank you. Yeah, it's been a long time coming. And I want to say also kudos on last year is kind of how I got on your radar with the Carbon TV Awards, and you were nominated for Best Podcast. So I'm super stoked to be here and glad we get a time to chat.
I really appreciate it. Yeah. You know, it's always funny connecting with a fellow Northwesterner, right? I always, you know, being in from the state of Washington originally, I'm like, well, that is the Northwest. So when people in Idaho are like, oh, I'm from the Northwest, I'm like, yeah, I don't know. It took me a few hours to get down here. But you are actually west of the Pacific Crest Trail. So in the state of Oregon, we'll gladly accept you. But are you born and raised in Oregon?
I am. Yes, I am. And I used to be really proud to say that. It's getting a little harder once I start to trickle out of Oregon and people are like, where are you from? And I'm like, well, look around, you know, kind of like, I'm from Oregon, but I'm not as crazy as most people over there. So
I love it. So you were born and raised in the outdoors, right? You cut your teeth really in the woods and fishing and everything. Was that something passed down from your mother and father or just your father? What's your origin story of getting in the outdoors?
You know, it was really, you know, my dad was the one who fostered that love for the outdoors, you know, hunting, fishing, just getting out, recreating. But I have to also give some accolades to my mom because she put up with it, right? You know, I was the son my dad didn't have. And in fact, when I was born, you know, I came out and the doctor held me up and he looks at my dad and he goes, it's a girl. And he goes, it's a what? You know, he was like convinced he should have this son to go do all these, you know, awesome things with. And, you know, he grew up in the outdoors and that was something that was passed down to him. And I really appreciate that, you know, and I hear stories pretty commonly, whether it's from guests, you know, that I work with or whatever, just chatting with people, you know, they're like, man, I just didn't have a foundation. I didn't have that, you know, heritage passed down from my family. And so I had to learn it later. And I'm like, I just feel so grateful that, you know, I was this little toe-headed girl bebopping around with my dad, probably making way too much noise and ruining most of his hunts when I was young. But he every time would extend the invitation for me to come out and be a part of what he was doing and took the time to really explain. And I can remember vividly looking back, and admittedly, we did a lot of road hunting. And I don't know if it's just because I was kind of hard to sit still or whatever, but, you know, we'd be either hiking along or driving along. And I remember I would see something out the window, or I would see something on a hike, and I'd be like, I wonder if anybody's ever seen this before, you know? And I just was so enamored with those wide open natural spaces, you know, the wild elements to it. And yeah, I'm super grateful that this has been a part of my life. I think my parents said I was 6 weeks old when they took me on my first deep sea fishing trip and, you know, got all the invites for deer camp. And I do have a regret though. I have to get this out now. And I've never really admitted this to my dad, but he always invited me elk hunting. And I was like, wait, when are you going? And what are the temperatures? And, you know, how many layers do I need? And I was like, nah, I'm going to pass on that. That sounds miserable. And now I'm like obsessed with elk, you know? So yeah. I'm like, really miss some key moments back then.
Oh man, man. I love that. Normally I don't typically ask females this, and I hope you don't mind, but how old are you?
I am 41.
Okay. So you and I are the exact same age. Okay. So there was a movie that came out when you and I were probably like late teens, early 20s, called Garden State. Did you ever see it?
No. And I'm terrible.
Okay. With Zach Braff. Anyways, there's a point in that movie where they talk about right now could be the one time that you get to make history and be doing something that no one's ever done in this moment, in this location, in this place. Like, you have that opportunity. And I always think about that every single time I'm hunting or when I'm out in the wild. I'm like, man, who else has ever touched that tree? Who else has ever walked where I'm walking? Because I'm not walking on a trail, right? Like, I'm making my own path, or I'm, you know, obviously I'm maybe trailing an animal on its game trail, but like, what human has stepped foot where I've been? And I think about that a lot, and the opportunity and the perspective that that provides in life. Because I did a podcast a year ago. It was like, when was the last time you did something for the first time? You know, because as we constantly grow, it's like, okay, well, yeah, I've always done this. I have experience. Like, But when you step into the unknown, and one of a buddy of mine, Andrew McKean, former Outdoor Life editor in chief, he says he only hunts because of the unknown. If he knew what hunting was going to, like, if the end result of hunting, he said, he probably wouldn't hunt. So
I think that's a huge draw. It really is. You never know. You never know what's going to be there, what's not going to be there, what you're going to see, what you're going to feel, you know, the cool things that you'll experience. But I love what you just said about, you know, doing things for the first time. And that's actually something I really focus on with hunting. Like, I deer hunted since, you know, I was a little tiny kid until I still deer hunt, but like, that's not my focus. I don't just every year bank on that, you know, deer tag to go out. And like, I try to hit a new species every year because of that right there, that newness. You have to be a student. You have to be so much more like, I feel like sometimes if you're used to doing something, if you found some success in an area, like, it just kind of becomes, I don't want to say mundane, but it's just like rinse and repeat almost. Mm-hmm. Step into not only a new state or country with a new species that you have to like learn to understand and figure out all of their habits and patterns. Like, to me, that's really kind of where I get super jacked about hunting, is like, I don't know what I'm doing, but I'm going to learn, and I'm going to try to better myself as a hunter overall.
Yeah, I love that. That really ties into the whole like hunting out of state, right? Because, you know, I never understood this when I first got into hunting 10 years ago, of like, why would I want to go spend a lot of money to go get a tag in another state when I still need to learn how to hunt here in my own state where it's cheaper? And what exactly what you said is like, I know so many people, and this actually happened with my father-in-law. So I wasn't taught how to hunt, but I did go out with my father-in-law once during muzzleloader season, late muzzleloader season in the state of Washington, and for elk or deer, but I mean, we were searching for elk. And he was walking on this hillside with me to where he used to hunt. Now, he was probably in his late 60s, early 70s when this happened. And he was looking around. And he's like, dude, it looks so much different than it did when I hunted here. He's like, there should be animals here. The animals were here all the time. I was like, Walt, when was the last time you hunted here? He's like, oh man, 1979 or whatever. And I was like, dude, it's been like 30 years, man. Of course it looks completely different. Yeah. Things change. But at the same time, like, I agree with you. I want that adventure, that primal adventure, because I believe that humanity lacks that in their day-to-day life. Mm-hmm. And hunting or nature or the wild provides that adventure. And so if you're going to the same place, and fishing may be different, right? Like fishing, you kind of have to go to the same honey hole at times. You can go fish new streams, new rivers, new lakes or whatever. But hunting, you can, there's so much to explore and see. And it's like, I can't just go to the same stump every year or the same lookout and be like, well, this glassing knob, I guarantee we'll see this many animals on that other side. And it's like, that's cool. Give me once. Let me learn. Let me practice. Let's go get out into nature and see where else I can hone my skills.
Yeah. And I mean, if you're strictly like, I want to make this like as quick as possible. I just want to fill the freezer. And some people, like, that's their mission and that's great. And of course we want to fill our freezer too, but I want that little extra edge. Like, I could go to the glassing spot and find the animals over there, but I could go to a new spot and what would I see there? What would I encounter? You know, is it better? Is it different? I can't do the same thing. Although I do have my honey hole spots though, that I can fall back on if I need to.
Yeah. Yeah. Agreed. Well, let's get back to that youth truck hunting and you like not going on an elk hunt and all this. What was it like in your household? Was hunting a lifestyle? Was it something that was more seasonal? It's like, oh, deer camp's coming up. We're going with dad to deer camp or whatever. Or was it just always ingrained and always a part of everyday life?
I would love to say the latter, but it was really a seasonality. You know, it was like, okay, it's time to put wild game in the freezer because that's what we're going to eat for most of the year. And I think about this too now, like when it came to like firearms, you know, we shot our guns once a year, you know, to make sure we were still zeroed. And to me now, like, is like in my early 30s to now, that's so different. Like, this is our life. This is what we do almost year round. And, you know, I'm really glad that I had that like introduction. But when I look at some other families and kind of how they do it, it's like, they're in it all the time. We were definitely in it for like deer camp and I was saying no to elk camp. So I missed that opportunity, but a little bit more limited when I was growing up as opposed to now.
And did you have any brothers or sisters?
I love that you asked this. So I do, I have one sister and imagine me and imagine her and we are polar opposites. Like we could not be more different.
Yeah.
And I love that because we had, you know, a lot of the same experiences and upbringing. And I remember, and I'll tell this very short. I've told this story quite a few times, but I remember the moment for me where I was like, this is who I am. I'm a hunter. I'm going to be a hunter. You know, I'm going to pass this down to my kids someday. And I was 7 or 8 years old and my sister was in deer camp with us. And I was like, Dad, can we go down the frog pond? We always camped in the same spot. And he's like, sure. And he grabbed his rifle and he put it on his shoulder and we get down, we're kind of walking down and we're like this last bend and we get around this bend and there's going to be what I called the frog pond. It was like this old water hole. And I can just kind of make out where it's going to be. And I take off running. And as I'm running, I'm like, why is there a tree moving? And it was this buck. He lifted up his head. It was this rack that I was seeing. And I like Flintstone, like put on the brakes. You know, I'm trying to stop. My dad's trying to get in front of me. And he shoots this buck. And long story short, we walk up to it. And he died in this pond. And so, you know, the water was just red, just red everywhere. And I was there, my sister was there, and my sister was mortified. Like she could be less happy. Like it was not good for her. And I remember in that moment, I was like, I'm a hunter. I'm going to do this someday for myself. I'm going to teach my kids this someday. And we, from that moment, kind of just had this deviation of where my life went and where her life went. And it's crazy because the same experience can do totally opposite things to different people. Mm-hmm.
Is she older or younger?
She's older.
Okay. She was raised differently, you think, than you, because she was older?
I think so. Yeah. I definitely think that she was. And, you know, now she's a vegan, although I did get her on our Alaska trip a couple years ago. And she's like, I'm not going to fish. Everybody else can do my fishing for me, or, you know, whatever. You guys just have fun. I'm just going to hang. She was the first to tag out. She cried when she caught her fish, but it was a really cool experience. And she was like, you know, she didn't want to fish, let alone eat it. Well, then because she caught it and just had respect, and like she went through the full process and cooked it and ate it. And it was really cool to see how when you do something for yourself like that, when you can sustain your own life by, you know, being a part of this, you know, heritage, this lifestyle, it does change something in you. Even though you might be vegan or you might have a philosophy or an ideology about something, when you get into and you actually go through the process, I think it can kind of wire this like concept and appreciation for our wild animals and fish.
Yeah. I just got done releasing a podcast this week where I talk about the three aspects of how you need to be able to communicate. So it's all about how to talk about hunting and why it's important. And more often than not, you know, this podcast is tailored towards people who, when you talk about hunting, it's the non-hunter that you're talking with, because the anti-hunter doesn't typically want to have that conversation. However, when you are talking to anybody, you have to have the emotion, especially when you're talking with the non/anti-hunter. Right. Mm-hmm. The vegans of the world. Right. Mm-hmm. You need to be able to show how and connect with their emotional side. And yeah. You do that through providing them the experience if they're willing enough. Right. So we use anecdotal evidence to convey our care towards wildlife, humanity, and universal values that resonate with non-hunters.
Yep. Absolutely. And it's so important. It's so important. You know, like you just said, we're probably never going to win that conversation with an anti-hunter. Maybe, you know, it can happen. But I think it's so important because it's who hunters are and what we do, generally speaking, is so misunderstood mm-hmm. by the outside world, by the non-hunters. And I think that it is such a responsibility for us, whether that's how we show up on social media or the conversations that we're having or what we're willing to share with a non-hunter, that can hopefully someday start to have a ripple effect of change. Because I think, as we all know, if we don't start to have a little redirect here, our rights, our gun rights, our public land access, like all of those things are in jeopardy big time.
Oh yeah, 100%. You know, the anti-hunters are coming continuously to take away our rights. Yep. And they're working at it from different angles, whether it's taxes on ammunition or increased license fees or limited draw opportunities or access to wild places or whatever it is. They don't want us to hunt.
Right.
They want complete and absolute control. And if rules for thee, not for me concept of, you know, you are an evil human person. Like, how could you take the life and want to be self-reliant, right? The most dangerous thing ever said is, you know, I'm from the government. I'm here to help.
Yes.
So, so we got to be able to talk about it. And I love your company's Her Outdoor Journey. You are providing anecdotal evidence and opportunities for people to then convey the truth about hunting and to share their personal emotional connection and values with humanity. It's a beautiful thing that you got going on.
Thank you. You know, my favorite thing about it though is watching the evolution when one of our guests tiptoes, like literally is like, oh my gosh, why did I sign up for this? They, you know, they're walking in and they see some other ladies who they probably don't know. And you just feel that, right? They're like, oh gosh, like, what did I get myself into? And the evolution that happens from that first moment to when they're walking out the door to like return back to their families, their lives, their jobs, whatever, it's a transformation. And what's so cool is that transformation is their confidence, you know, their knowledge, their skill, but what it does to them intrinsically is one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Share an example if you wouldn't mind. Can you pull one off the top of your head right there?
Yeah, I mean, I can think of several, and many of them are rooted in, we cut our teeth as a company on doing archery camps. And which is kind of strange because I've only been shooting a bow for 10 years now. Although I grew up hunting, archery was so new to me and I just became obsessed. And so I spent a few years working with Joel Turner, who's an incredible archery coach and shot coach and everything, shooting coach. And so we started kind of rolling into these archery camps and women would come in and they'd be like, you know, it'd be going through our whole fundamentals course and, you know, early on days, I should say, you know, before I really, really refined things, you know, I would see these blank faces and I'm like, okay, I'm not instructing, you know, as good as I can be, but, you know, they'd have questions like, okay, you just mentioned, you know, the peep or the D loop or whatever, you know, can you show me where this is at? Right. So girls that are very green in understanding their bow, their shot process, all of these different things. But what happens is this light bulb turns on and they're like, well, I've never done that before. My husband, my boyfriend, my dad, the guy at the archery shop, whatever, he does all that for me. I just hand him my bow and he fixes it. And then I just go back to shooting. Well, what happens now is we teach so that every woman understands the entirety of their bow. You know, what is this bow? What is your shot process? And we don't sight people's bows in for them. We don't dial in their sights. We don't adjust anything. We give them the keys and they do that themselves. And so that evolution, especially through our archery camps, is walking in, not really knowing their bow, not knowing what a shot process is, not being able to describe how they, you know, shoot an arrow, to they can tell me all of those things. They can do all those things. They can sight in their bow themselves. And if they're starting to feel like something's off, they can kind of diagnose what this problem is. Mm-hmm. So that transformation, I think alone, just speaking strictly from our archery camps, has been huge. And I can think of one just example. We had a gal come, I think it was in 2018, to a camp. She'd never shot over 20 yards. And by the end of the weekend, she actually, she got second place, but she did a shoot off with another gal at 60 yards and like bullseyed. I'm like, you came in never shooting past 20 yards. And now you're like feeling pretty confident and like really getting this down at 60. Like that's you, like that's because you put in this effort and really, you know, took the time to invest in yourself. Yeah. But that confidence, man, just seeing that light bulb moment for people.
Yeah. Ownership's a beautiful thing, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Right. Like, you always want to take care of something more when you feel like you have ownership of it.
You do.
You know,
you really do.
Whether it's your house versus an apartment that you're renting, or a car, or just, you know, borrow someone's stuff. You're like, okay, you clean it up, give it back. But it's yours. Like, dude, don't scratch this. Like, let's take care of it. Ownership. It's an amazing thing what it'll do to the human psyche.
Yep, for sure.
So shifting gears here, I want to know more about you and being a mother and how you balance life and responsibilities and jobs and relationships with hunting. And what is that dynamic like? I'm always inviting my wife. I'm like, I want you to hunt with me. She's like, well, who's going to watch the kids? I'm like, because they're not at the age where we could leave them at home alone, or that all of us could go without it being a babysitting opportunity and more focusing on her hunting. What is that like? What's that dynamic?
There is no balance in my life. There's just not. So I spent years trying to find that. Like, what is that sweet spot? What is that happy medium where, you know, everybody's cups full, everyone's taken care of, you know, I can have a little time for myself. And to be honest, I've never found it. I spent years chasing it and really being almost like just frustrated, overwhelmed, like disappointed in myself and sometimes in others that like, I can't find this balance. Like everybody keeps talking about balance. I don't think it exists, but for me, what I've done is I work really hard to be where I am. And so being present, like, you know, I might leave for 10, 14 days on an extended hunt. And my kids are older now. They're 19 and 16 and, you know, they're fairly independent. But when I'm hunting, I'm hunting. And when I'm home and when I'm with my family, I'm with them. When I'm working, I'm working. And so I can't give a good answer that's going to make a bunch of people feel good and be that like takeaway moment, like, oh, this is how I do it. Okay, I just got to check these boxes and I'm going to have balance. Let me know if you found it, because I haven't. But all I can say is I really work hard to be present when I'm with my people or when I'm in whatever hat I'm wearing. I just try to show up for that.
Yeah. Are you married?
I am.
Does your husband hunt?
My husband does hunt. He just retired a couple of years ago after 24 years in the service. And he has kind of restarted his life now in the civilian world. And he's a big game hunting guide in Alaska. So he's gone about 7 months out of the year or so. And he's chasing big dreams as well.
Yeah. Well, so what type of conversations are you having with your children? Are they wanting to pursue hunting? Were they raised with the itch of like, oh yeah? Or do they look at it like, oh, mom and dad are gone again, and they have a little bit of, you know, anger or despise towards hunting?
Oh, such a good question. Well, I'm going to start with this. This is my son right now. Oop, can you?
Oh, shot a beautiful hog.
Yeah, my son is in Texas right now. He is hunting. And my youngest son loves hunting. We took him on his first backcountry remote fly-in moose hunt when he was 12. And I'll never forget, and he had done, you know, several other hunts leading up to that, but he looks at me, we're like, you know, the plane is left, we're a couple days in, and he looks at me, he's like, can we live here? You know, we're like going to get our water, we're chopping firewood, we're living in a tent, you know, and he's like as happy as he can be. He's like, my dreams have come true. You know, we've like see a pack of wolves over here. He's just like enamored with this place. So he very much has the itch. He's been successful with deer and, you know, has shot some good animals. My oldest son is very different than his younger brother and has, I think he has a little bit of a desire for it, but I think you kind of hit the nail on the head. I think we hunt so much as a family, like it's really what we do. Like vacations. No, we're going to go hunting. And so I think that's put a little bit of a hurdle up for him, just a little bit. I mean, he still enjoys it, but just like my sister and I, right? Like same experiences can just push or pull people in a little different direction.
Mm. It's interesting because as we're having this conversation, I'm reflecting on my parenting with my boys. So, you know, me learning how to hunt at the exact same time that I'm raising them, you know, it's like, oh, guys, I can't wait to take you hunting. I can't wait to take you hunting. And I rarely stop to be like, well, do you want to learn how to hunt? Do you want to hunt? Mm-hmm. Is this something that you want for your life? Obviously, I want to teach them the skills, and then whether or not they pursue that, that's whatever. And I also want to provide them the experience, because as they get older in life, then that will also lead towards the whole conservation aspect of ballot box biology and being able to vote and protect and defend hunting. Or yes, defend it for the people that you love that hunt, regardless of whether or not you are a participant or not. So my oldest son, when we first moved to Texas and before I got a hunting lease and he was starting to get, you know, shoot, he was like 7 years old or whatever it was. And I got invited to take him hunting, to go out during youth weekend here in Texas. Never really shot a gun much before, if not like just BB gun. And I bought a 300 blackout Ruger American ranch rifle that I was like, oh, this will be my kid's first gun. And not really, you know, I was so naive and new, but nonetheless, he went out and shot his first little deer, which was a spike buck, opening morning of youth weekend. And I didn't film the deer. I just filmed him. I just wanted to have that experience videotaped. And I was so proud of him. And then, you know, he tells me now, is like, hey, Carter, I want to teach you, you know, I want to coach you in basketball. Can I sign you up for basketball? He's like, no, Dad, it's not my thing. I don't want to do that. I'm like, man, okay, well, I'd love to just do this with you. He's like, yeah, it's not my thing. I'm like, what are you into? He's like, I like to draw and read and, you know, do art and stuff. I'm like, okay, I get that. And so I'm having these conversations with him about hunting. And I'm like, Carter, do you want to hunt? Oh, I'd rather play with my friends. I'm like, okay, I'm going to go out to the lease and I'm going to go hunting. The next boy up, do you want to hunt? Yeah, Dad, I want to hunt. And he instantly comes with. And I'm starting to track, because I don't know if it's an older sibling, like the oldest mentality of like, they're not getting into hunting as much as the youngers are. I don't know. It's just a little reflection I'm having right now.
Definitely. Yeah, no, that's interesting that you say that, because I can think of a lot of firstborns that just really aren't interested in it. But I think too, sometimes, and I know this was true for me, it might not be for you, but I'm guessing some of the listeners today could probably kind of relate that we tend to, I think, sometimes put a lot of expectations on our children to follow in our footsteps. Mm-hmm. And that might not be the choice that they want to make. And I think too, you know, I can think back on times, you know, I was a single mom for 11 years. And so, you know, it was, if I wanted to do it, they were going to come with me, kind of thing. And so I remember a lot of hunts early on with them where I would just be frustrated. I'm just like, you know, I try to do all the things, make them happy, bring all the snacks, you know, but, you know, something would happen. One of them would have a meltdown. And it wasn't until I just truly lowered my expectation. Like, I'm not going to kill something today. Like, we're not going to take something home today. But the expectation wasn't a notch tag. For me, I had to switch that and go, it's the experience. It's teaching them a little bit of a skill. It's allowing them to have fun. It's allowing them to read tracks or scat or terrain or just use binos. And I think once for me, I flipped that and stopped like the pressure side of things of like wanting to go out and be successful. Mm-hmm. We all started having so much more fun. And people will ask me pretty frequently, like, hey, I want to get my wife or my girlfriend or my daughter, or my kids or whatever out. Like, what do you recommend? I'm like, lower your expectations and keep them really, really happy. Like, bring all the snacks, make sure they don't get cold, don't hike too far, make sure they have good boots, you know? But like, I think truly sometimes we have to kind of step back and like temper what we want out of something to make the experience catered to the level of the person that we're with.
Oh yeah. Just like, it's a great, see, I love it. I know exactly what I want to say, but I just want to commend you on just how you operate in this space. Now you're showing up in a very grounded manner of being thoughtful and thorough. We in communication very often tell ourselves stories in our heads of what the other person is thinking, what the other person wants, what, you know, and we live off of these conversations in our own head that never get expressed, right?
Yep.
You said this. I never said that. Well, I heard you say, I never said that. Okay. Well, let me just clarify. This is what I heard you say when you said what you did. Okay. I didn't mean it like that. And just the clarification, right? In the Bible, it says, without vision, the people perish. Mm. We need to have clarity, because clarity produces an abundance of life, right? Yeah. And more joyful and more positive experience across the board. So these stories that we tell ourselves in the head, we live out, and then we don't know what type of issues or problems we're causing or negatively impacting others because we're living in our head and not living what you said earlier, present and in the moment and communicating. And you know, it's very interesting.
Yeah, well, it's so true. And like when you're talking about like these one-sided conversations, and I was just having a conversation with a young gal, she's 19, and you know, at 19, lots of things are happening and going on. And she was talking about, well, so-and-so is mad at me. And I said, how do you know that? And she was like, well, and she reads me this text. And I said, I don't pick up anger or mad or anything like that. And I, you know, I was explaining pretty much what you just said is like, sometimes we have this one-sided conversation or we feel like somebody meant something or didn't mean something or whatever. It's like, no, like just being clear, a clear communicator and just slowing down enough to just sit down and have, and that's something I've done so much more recently. Once my first son turned 18 and he moved out and like started his adult life, I was like, oh my heavens, like I am not ready for this, you know? Mm-hmm. And so it made me be so much more available. And instead of just like listening, I'm like really intent. Like, I want to hear you. I want you to know that you're valued and heard. And I'm listening to the stories about your school or your sports or whatever. But I think so many times, yeah, we don't take the time to have a two-way conversation that's really absorbed. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like, I'm hearing you, but I'm thinking what you probably actually mean by that, you know, what you're saying instead.
Yeah. My wife, she always tells me, she goes, you never listen to people. You never listen to people. You're always thinking about what you're going to say next. And I'm like, oh, it's not good, right? We need to slow down. And this is why hunting, I believe, is such an important life skill. It's like, if you don't go slow in hunting, you're not going to be successful. So mm-hmm. Translate that to relationships or speech or communication or, you know. I had Maddie Nelson from Seekins Precision. Are you familiar with Maddie? Awesome guy. He's former military, and I brought up this little off topic, but, you know, like, you know, Maddie, we always hear that slow is smooth and smooth is fast. And he's like, yeah, that's the most BS thing you've ever heard. He goes, slow is slow. He goes, but smooth can be fast, but slow is just slow. It just made me chuckle how we're tying this all in, where, you know, being present and being still. And it's really fascinating. How has giving hunting or the giving the gift of the outdoors to others boomeranged back and, you know, rooted you or impacted your life?
Oh my gosh. So many ways, big and small. It's funny. I think I hear people say this quite frequently, and there've been times in my life I'm like, but really, do you really mean that? You know, it's like you hear somebody say, you know, I find as much joy when somebody else tags out as if I do. And for years I was like, yeah, bro, I don't know if that's true. Like, I'm just judging you right out the door. I don't know that that's true. Anyways, but it is true. Like it, like watching my kids tag an animal, watching the women that I work with, either fill their tag, learn their bow, learn to shoot long range. There is just a fulfillment. I'm not even sure that I have a sophisticated enough vocabulary to describe, because, and I'll kind of take it a few steps back. I dealt with like really bad depression from 17 to, I don't know, early 20s. And like, I was like suicidal. I was like, there's no purpose for me on this earth, you know, and just had gone through some things and just wasn't in a good headspace mentally. And it was through the outdoors that I really started to like control my mental health, like work through some of the things that I was going through. And so I think now watching that same kind of evolution where a lot, and I'm not saying all of our women come in this way, but I think all of us, and I'll speak to what I know is like women, we have so many pressures. We have so much going on, so many balls in the air, people we're trying to keep alive, you know, expectations that we're trying to meet, that we tend to put ourselves kind of on the back burner. And sometimes that looks like our fitness going awry or our mental health, our goals, whatever the case is. But when I see these women come in, and over years, and a lot of our women, they stay for years. Like it's a community. Like I say this online all the time. Like, I'm so thankful for our community. And it's, I never use the word followers. It's like, it's not like these are our core people. And when I can watch them come in and they've just dealt with the loss of their little brother, or their husband left them, or their child passed, like a lot of these women are dealing with heavy things, but they get to use something like this that they learn to step into, to be vulnerable, to control, to have the support with other women in there. To me, that's really like the, I won't say the biggest blessing, because my family obviously is that for me, but it fills my cup in a way that I just don't even have words to describe. When I can see that these events and the women that they get to be surrounded by, the skills they get to learn, truly changes their life. Like from this point forward, they now have a better appreciation for who they are. You know, walking through the trials or the hurdles or not, there's something that they can control. And for me, that is really like the holy grail of my job.
I always say on the podcast here that you can never outgive good. Just that's our job, to put good out into the world, right? Love God, love man. You know, and by loving man, you also love God, because we're made in his image.
That's right.
And so the thing that people often forget, though, is that we, as in ourselves, are also made in his image, and that we're meant to love ourselves. And if we're not loving ourselves and taking care of ourselves, then we're not loving God the way he wants us to. You go on an airline, and the speech that they give before you take off is, you know, if we hit turbulence, the oxygen mask is going to fall from the ceiling, and you need to make sure you put on your mask first before you help anyone else, right? Because if we're not good.
It's so hard to remember that.
You
know, it really is. And yeah, I think it's something that I can reflect on in points in my life. I'm sure you can as well. And women that I work with too. And it's just, it's like, sometimes you just need somebody to show you what you're capable of, and to like get you back to, loving yourself again.
I will say, like, hunting for me 100% transformed my life, because it was the first time in my life that I chose myself. I chose hunting. It wasn't something that was, hey, here's this, I did this, my, you know, whether my mom or dad or, you know, my community saying, well, this is what we've done. Here you go. This is your next step. I chose it. And when I chose it, that means, tying back into the beginning of our episode, I also chose ownership. I chose ownership of my life, the actions that I am going to go through. And I have a lot of childhood trauma. I have a lot of issues that I constantly am dealing with. I turn to food for comfort. It's a horrible thing. I'm constantly navigating my waistline and making healthy choices, because when I don't feel good, I turn to food, right? When my heart hurts, when my when my emotions get attacked, I'll turn to food, or I'll turn to things that aren't good. But what I learned is that when I chose to step into becoming a hunter, I had to be courageous. And that courage to be like, no, fear is not going to control me. I'm going to step into my own. It is my life. I want this. I want it bad enough that fear doesn't matter. There's something better on the other side. And that's what I always talk about with the transformative power that hunting provides, is that there is a better life out there. And you, by, and you as in the royal you, all you listeners out there, if you want something different in your life, then you have to change, because doing the same thing over and over and over and expecting the same results or different results is insanity. I think it's extremely powerful that you're spending time with these women. And like you just said, a lot of them are coming with heavy issues. Won't say baggage, won't say, you know, all this. We're humans, and we deal with the human experience, and it sucks at times, but there's also the polarity of life, and we only know the bright sunny days and the warmth of the sun because of the dark cold nights.
Yes. That's something I've been talking a lot about with my family lately, with just loss and some grief that we're dealing with. It's like, you know, to love so big, you know, to be able to have that experience and to have such rich, you know, relationship with people. The other side of that is sometimes grief and it's sometimes loss, but it's like, but all big emotions, whether it's a good, a feel good or a hurt, it's all mixed into that same bag, you know? And I think the perspective to give space to both of those, you know, the good and the bad, is really important. And I love that you said courageous, because that's actually that was my word for 2025. I'm one of those weird people that kind of has a intention for the year. In fact, I actually got it tattooed on my arm when I was in Australia on one of our girls' trips.
Hey-o, there we go.
But yeah, it's being courageous and stepping into things that you can naturally be fearful of is flipping hard. Mm-hmm. Man, when you come out that other side, you are not the same person.
Yeah.
You're not.
Well, the other thing is courage is contagious,
mm-hmm.
right? When one person steps up with bravery and everyone else looks at them and says, whoa, hey, if they can do it, I can do it. And that's the power of community as well.
Definitely. So important. Yeah. So important. And I think that's something that, you know, really... It's funny because I look at my business and I was talking to a mentor on the phone the other day, and we're talking about origin of HOJ. And I was like, I had no idea I was really starting a business, you know, air quotes business. I just was passionate about being in the space and serving women and building community. I didn't have that. Like, I went to deer camp. I was the only girl. And if, you know, you can imagine all the things that can get said in a camp full of all dudes, right? Like it never was a feel good place for me. And I wanted to change that. And I think that it's cool because the women who come into our events, whether that's just, you know, in passing or they actually come to a retreat, they get to be that next ripple effect for somebody else. Mm-hmm. You know, I've always said, we're just the kindling, you know, we're just that little spark, and what our community and what others get to do with it is something that can truly change and impact not only the hunting industry and these, you know, kind of internal pieces in this ecosystem, but that goes into their family, into their jobs, into their grocery stores, into their churches. And I think that, you know, it's a great way to make a little bit of difference in this world.
Oh yeah. I mean, listen, you make the big time where you are. And that's, people forget that a lot.
Mm-hmm.
You got to make the big time where you are. It doesn't matter if you work in an office space with four other people. You make that opportunity the best as it ever can be and make it awesome for other people as well.
Mm-hmm.
Let your light shine before mankind, right? Be joyful, be loving, be kind, be patient, be all the fruits of the spirit that it talks about in the Bible, because that makes it better for you and for everyone else. You know, I taught health, middle school health, for a long time. And I'd look at these kids each and every day, and I'm like, I stare at you, and most of you have frowns on your face.
Mm.
I go, you all look at me. If you have a teacher and every single day your teacher's frowning, is that an environment that you want to spend time in? And they're all like, no, it's not. And I'm like, yeah, I also am in your environment. We're in it together. And I'm looking out at faces constantly that are frowning. I go, you choose happiness. You choose happiness. It is a choice. You choose into it every single day, just like you choose ownership of your life, right? Yeah. We don't play victim. There's no victim mentality. Yes, our experiences in our life get filtered through our perspective, which create our thoughts, our feelings, our emotions, actions, and consequences. But 90% of our thoughts aren't real. And just because we have a thought doesn't mean we have to respond to that thought or treat it like it's actual fact. And that is something that, in the psychology of things, humanity, I truly believe, is missing. They just want to believe anything that pops in their head.
Mm-hmm. And those can be very dangerous narratives.
Yep. Which ties back into the whole, you know, we tell stories in our head about the world that we live in.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's such a great point. And what do they say? We have like 60,000 thoughts or something like that a day.
Yeah.
Right. Like you said, like most of them are things we've fabricated or aren't really happening, or a worry, or, you know, something. But yeah, if you can just kind of rewrite, step back and choose to put your best foot forward, your best smile, your best attitude, go out of your way for other people, for yourself, it does change. It makes a big shift.
Do you believe in the law of attraction?
Yes.
Do you practice it?
I try to. Yeah.
Where'd you learn about it at? Or how old were you?
I think I was in college, actually. It might have been like in a psychology project we were doing or something. I don't know. It's been years.
Yeah. It's fascinating. The words we speak become the world we live in.
Yes.
You know, I was talking to my children about this the other night. We were on a walk and I forget exactly what was said, but I was like, Gannon, you can't say that. Or you can say that. I don't want, you know, like, you get to say whatever it is. And ultimately, you're creating the world that you're living in.
Yeah.
I go, you're going to attract negativity to your life if you're constantly focusing on negativity and vice versa. Now, a lot of people, and I have a Christian background. A lot of people in the Protestant church or, you know, Christian life find law of attraction very New Agey. Do you have any religious background?
Yeah, I'm a Christian. I grew up in a Christian church and still go to church this day.
Okay.
Yeah.
How do you merge that? Or what's your thought on that?
Well, I think, you know, the word tells us, like, you know, talks about how we speak, you know, internally, externally, you know, where we think. And so I think that it kind of goes hand in hand. Now, I think anything can get taken out of context. You know, I think anything can be morphed into something that it shouldn't be. But I think that, you know, God wants us to be joy filled and he wants us to love people, you know, and be good stewards. And so I think that when we are thinking about the law of attraction, thinking positive thoughts, encouraging our neighbor, you know, helping out. I think that it's not New Agey at all. It's like, that seems, you know, from what I've taken from the Bible, what I've taken from any, you know, message that I've ever sat through and listened to, whether that's in person or something online or not, like God is speaking to the heart of what he wants for our life, which is blessings and abundance and joy, and to not be focused on worry or fear. Right. And so to me, it's just a no-brainer.
Yeah. I love it. How do you navigate, and obviously your children are older now, but I'm a father of young boys who are starting to go hunting with me and all that. And I like to pray with my kids before a hunt and, you know, Lord God, you know, we'd love for you to provide an animal for us and whatever. And my middle son, he's like, Dad, why didn't God bring a deer out that we could shoot tonight? Mm-hmm. Well, how do you navigate conversations like that?
That's interesting. I haven't come across that. Maybe I should start praying that we find animals. but for me, I also always pray at the start of our hunt, and it doesn't matter who I'm with. If I'm with the camera girl and she's not a believer, or, you know, it doesn't matter. I'll always pray. But I never pray for an animal. I'm going to throw that in there, Johnny. That's good. I'm going to throw that in there. God, please bring me a giant bull.
Right.
No.
Hey, also, ask and it shall be given, right? Seek and you shall find. Like, let's go.
I always pray for my perspective and for my experience. Of course, safety too, we always throw in there. But I don't know. I've always tried to limit the pressure of getting something down. And this is kind of going beyond your point probably a little bit, but I pray that I stay grateful for the opportunity and an able body that can be out there. But thinking to your point, I did have a couple questions earlier this year with a friend of mine, and she was asking me some really hard questions about God and faith and how, you know, if God is real, he would allow the atrocities that are happening in the world to be. And there are definitely some times in conversations where I'm like, I struggle with that too. Like, I don't have the answer to that. Like, those are things that I think I wrestle with. And I think a lot of Christians well, it doesn't really matter where you are in your faith journey, but I think we all have big questions that we're not going to get answered until someday we have the opportunity to be standing at the gates of heaven, you know, and everything that we've had to have faith in, the things that we can't see, become tangible and real to us. But yeah, I'm going to throw that in there. God, please bring me a big old bull this year.
Yeah, it's really interesting. And I love how you have those conversations, those tough questions. I actually love when people ask me that, like, oh, okay, you're opening the door. Get ready. Let's have this conversation. Because what people often forget is that even though God created it all, he gave us free will. And our free will, and we choose into what we want.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't want my son to get murdered or a car accident to happen, or like, I don't choose into that. But other people in this world choose, and we are put in this earth for a time and a season.
Yeah.
And that's why, you know, make the most of what we have right now and be present, like what you talked about earlier. I'm extremely impressed by you, Miss Preeti. I want to spend more time diving into these topics. There's a lot of people that I've encountered in the hunting industry that share a lot of our values, but they don't necessarily speak it.
Mm.
And you know, to not speak is to speak.
Right.
Right. Like, you know, if you've listened to this podcast, listeners, before, you've heard me say this, but like, you know, Dr. Niemöller during World War II, you know, first they came for the trade unionists, and I wasn't a trade unionist, so I didn't say anything, you know. And then they came for the Jews, and I wasn't a Jew, so I didn't say anything. Then they came for me, and there was no one left to speak, right? So no action is action. Not saying something is saying something. So the best thing that we can do, and why our founding fathers here in the United States of America put freedom of speech at the beginning as number one, is because words carry power. Power. Like ultimate power. And because words require ownership. And when we own words, we own knowledge, we own the definitions. Those are tools. And we can apply those tools to create, fix, or mend anything that we need in this world.
Yeah. I feel like I've seen a little bit more of an outpouring of people who are leaning into their faith a bit.
Yeah.
I won't name names specifically, but I've been encouraged lately, and I don't know. I mean, it's definitely been since Charlie Kirk was assassinated. I do feel like there has been a bit of a revival that has happened and kind of been sparked from that situation. But I'm here for it. I'm really liking it. I'm liking that more people seem to be bold and kind of speaking out, and instead of kind of feeling like they're going to put all of their, like, being a believer is a big thing, mm-hmm. right? And that's not something that we should hide or be ashamed to admit or say, or, but now I think seeing some of these bigger names actually talk about their faith, I think it's getting the wheels turning for some other folks as well, which is cool.
Yeah. Going back to the praying thing for an animal, I want to hit on this topic, because I encountered this when I was in high school. I played college football as a quarterback, and before game, you know, you pray for victory, right? You pray for safety. May no one be like injured in this game, but bring us victory, Lord God. And then I got posed the question. I was like, well, is the other team not also praying for victory? Right? And it's like, interesting. And so I tie that in with this prayer for God providing an animal to Native American beliefs. And their beliefs was, when an animal shows up, you never pass on an animal because it presents itself to you.
Mm.
Right? Like, I am here for you to take me. And so I chew on that quite a bit. I'm like, okay, does then also, and I have no idea if I'm speaking beyond like anything right here, but like, do animals then also have free will? And are they choosing into the life cycle of of meeting that, and then how does God intertwine? These are the concepts and the questions I ask myself when I'm out hunting.
That's awesome. You go down the rabbit hole for sure. I was thinking about that too, kind of after the fact, and I always just ask for God's will. Like if it is, like my son is in Texas right now hunting, and he needs this reset right now. I'll just leave it at that. And so I've just been praying so hard over them and their experiences and their conversations and the mentors that they're with right now. And then when I knew they were going hunting, and I was like, and God, if it's your will, please let him get a hog down. Right. You know? And so I think that sometimes, I don't know, maybe this is kind of my take on it. It's like, I want to win the lottery. I want to, you know, kill a giant, you know, world record bull. And I want to do these things, but like, I want God's will more than I want those materialistic things to happen in my life. Mm-hmm. And so I know that if he's giving me something, if he's fulfilling a promise in me, if he's bringing abundance to my life, like that is his will. And then from there, it's my job to honor that.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. Now at HOJ, it took me a bit for her outdoor journey. HOJ, you guys also run a podcast, right?
Yes.
And that's
very intermittently. I will be honest. That's usually the first thing that gets tabled when my schedule gets hectic. But yes, it's called the Soul Summit Podcast.
Talk about what you focus on for that podcast.
Yeah. So kind of back to our foundation as a company, everything that we do, we have a lot of adventure-based stuff, but everything we do is rooted in skills. We do have a lot of newer hunters, newer general recreation. And so we try to focus on things that are going to help, you know, be a tactical tool for people, whether that's learning e-scouting from Mark Livesay or talking to Trent Fisher of Born and Raised Outdoors about Roosevelt elk hunting. We're trying to always give a little bit of those knowledge nuggets, if you want to call them that, so that people can leave the podcast. I'm not like one of those people. I'm not super funny. I'm not an entertainer, right? Like I want to help propel you forward in your outdoor journey. So it's all pretty much skill-based stuff.
Awesome. Awesome. I love that. Well, listeners, I hope you guys really enjoyed this episode. Miss Courtney, I could go on for a long time, and I think you and I need to connect the Western Hunt Expo, SHOT Show. What are you going to be at?
Oh, man, we're going to be at a lot of shows. Neither one of those. As of now, I'm working really hard to get into Western Hunt Expo, though. If not, I might be kind of just walking around some of those shows, but we'll be at all of the ISE events. We'll be at PDX if people are going to come out to the Sportsman Show out here. We're going to be at Mile High Expo in Denver, and a few others that will get posted on the website as well.
Awesome. What do you say about the guys who heard this episode and are like, man, I'd really love my wife to get into hunting, or I really love my girlfriend, or, you know, or I want to find a girl, you know, single men that are like, dude, I really want a girlfriend or a spouse or a significant other that also hunts or wants to get into the outdoors?
Oh man, so many questions right there. But I would say, for one, I get that question all the time. Like, you should start a dating app with all these single women that come in here. That's not going to happen. But I will say that there's some awesome ladies out here in this community. But reach out. We would love to connect. Even if you don't end up coming to an event or retreat that we're putting on, we would love to try to connect you with somebody maybe in your local area. I'm kind of the mentality that all ships rise together. So if I can't help serve you, I want to find somebody else that can. Just reach out, heroutdoorjourney.com or heroutdoorjourney on Instagram. Or if you have a more personal thing, it could be Courtney_Preedy.
I love it. I love it. Well, guys and girls and all of you listeners, I hope you enjoyed this episode. Courtney, I really appreciate you. You're a sweet soul. You're a shining bright light in this world, and the world needs more people like you. Way to be courageous.
Oh, man. Well, thank you so much for having me on. I really hope that we get to connect and maybe get our families together or something in the future. That would be awesome.
Yeah, I'd love that. All right, guys. Well, if you enjoyed this episode, please leave a comment, subscribe, thumbs up, rating, review. All that stuff helps spread our mission of mentorship is conservation. Remember, if you want hunting to last for generations to come, then it's up to us to be the change we want to see in the world and to leave a lasting legacy of love for everyone here. Be blessed. Thanks for tuning in to this episode. For Courtney Preedy and her outdoor journey, Be blessed, freedom on, and as always, stay soulful. If you enjoyed today's podcast and want to support the show, you can always like, share, subscribe, and leave a rating as it helps us share our mission of mentorship is conservation. Thank you so much for tuning in and being a part of Soul Seekers Nation as we transform lives through primal adventure.